Well, good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, KYMN 1080 Radio AM, for over 50 years, and 95.1, The One FM. Serving all of the Northfield area on this, the 14th day of November, and the year is 2018. Before I introduce my guest here, I got a couple of things to get off my mind. Do you remember the old days when you used to put notes on spindles, and now they're on Kindles and smartphones and all that, but you used to put the piece of paper right on that spindle? Well, I have a mind spindle, and I want to say this morning started off really bad, really bad. I was looking forward to coming into work this morning because of my guest, but as I backed out of the driveway, I wasn't paying attention, and I had parked closer to the wall last night, and as I backed out, I'm looking in the rearview television thing that's on the mirror, and all of a sudden I hear a crash, and I go, what? And I pull out of the garage and look to see that I had wiped out my right rear view mirror, and that's the casing and everything. Then I had a little thing hanging by some wires, so I had to get out and put the thing inside the car and then roll the window up just far enough so that wouldn't flap around. And I figured that that is about a $1,500 to $2,000 damage, the way they make cars today. That's number one. Then number two is Wednesday. I forget sometimes that on Wednesday the school starts late, and so when I'm coming in from 22 on to 246 or Division Street to go south, there's traffic backed all the way up because of all the school buses that are dropping kids off because they start school an hour later than normal. So that was the bad part. Now, the good part is, as I came into the studios, I saw a big, tall, good-looking guy, and I said, oh, good, he's here. I saved a space for him, but he already had one, and he knows us well here in Northfield, and that is Mr. Number 83, Stu Boyd. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Wayne. Great to be down here again.
You know, I always appreciate it when you come down. And, of course, I'm going to tell you that, yes, we're going to go out for lunch, and we're going to go to the QB, the quarterback club.
Beautiful. I love that place.
And I have a good friend that's going to meet us there.
Wonderful.
So we'll be, maybe you'll save a booth, you know, and then we'll get you fed and everything else. And I don't know if we've been there before. Yeah, we have.
Great ribs, yes.
Oh, yeah. He spent all that money on ribs.
Yeah, darn you.
And that, but they're the,
loosen up that pocketbook.
Well, you know, you talked to me in fun. We're talking about that. Guys get perks. By the way, for those of you that don't know, Stu Boyd is a former Minnesota Viking, and he played in three of the four Super Bowls the Vikings were in. He's the only Minnesota Viking to catch a touchdown pass in a Super Bowl. And hopefully, he says, I hope they break that record someday. And in addition to that, he's a good friend of mine. We've known each other for over 40 years and almost became my partner here at KYMN Radio back in 19, I think it was 81, right around there.
But I think I also helped you when you were inducted in the Radio Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
That's right. You were my spokesperson. I thank you for that again.
Well-deserved award.
So, anyhow, I said, it's about time Stu comes down. I haven't seen you since last summer.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the Vikings and all that. But first, rest his soul, one of your good friends and a guy that people our age really loved and respected was running back number
30,
Bill Boom Boom Brown.
Yes, I went to his funeral yesterday, my wife and I, Linda, and we such a great time. A lot of my Viking teammates were there, about 8 or 10 guys were there, and from the old Vikings, Mick Tingeloff, Dave Osborne, Paul Krause, John Campbell.
Mick was there?
Oh, yeah, Mick was there.
Wow.
With his wife. Mick's had some memory problems, but he was certainly remembered. In fact, Bill Boom Boom Brown named his son after Mick Tingeloff. So his Bill Boom Boom's son Mick was there, and we reminisced. He used to work at the McDonald's in Bloomington, as did Mick's first wife, Kay, before she became ill. And it was kind of a family affair in those days, and Billy was, and I lived in Bloomington, and he was certainly my favorite guy. And I, of course, nobody has to tout Bill Brown, but I thought at one time there was no better running back in football than Bill Brown. Of course, he was in the era of the great Jim Brown with Cleveland Browns, who set all these rushing records, and he was truly great. One-dimensional, just ran the football, never caught passes or blocked. And, of course, being a Packer fan, my idol growing up was Jim Taylor, Hall of Fame fullback for the Green Bay Packers. And he could do it all, great player, no question about that. But, of course, he was with great Green Bay teams. Bill Brown, when he came to the Vikings from the Bears in the middle to late 60s, I thought was as good a player as there was in football because he could run the ball, I think gained near 1,000 yards, which was a big feat way back when. Caught 40, 50 passes a year, plus blocked like crazy for his running mate, Dave Osborne, number 41. So Bill was a total package, but, of course, in those days before Bud Grant came, this was the Norm Van Brocklin days. They weren't winning, and they were just kind of an unknown team in the middle of the Midwest. And I don't think he got – all they did go to four Pro Bowls and the three Super Bowls with the Vikings. A little bit under the radar as far as national attention, but he was that good, and he was an inspiration to me. Because there's no guy that loved playing football and practicing football more than Bill Brown. Always a sunny attitude, and if you've ever played football at either a high school, college, or pro level, practicing football is not that fun. But Bill loved everything about training camp in Mankato. He would have card games going, and he would keep two, three conversations going on in the lunch hall, and he was a character. He was the epitome of a good football player and a good guy.
Well, I know you have stories about Boom Boom, and I have stories about Boom Boom. But you mentioned the Packers and Jim Taylor.
Yes.
What about Paul? What about Paul Horning? Was he a hero to you at all?
Well, he was. But you know, Paul Horning—they called him the Golden Boy. He was a quarterback at Notre Dame, and of course, you and I are up on our Packer history. He was a great player. But I thought Jim Taylor, who was not that big of a guy, Jim Taylor's about 6'1", maybe 215, 220 pounds, where Paul Horning was about 6'3 and about 225, 230, and he could pass. And he was a kicker for the Packers, and he was flamboyant guy. Bill, you know, I never compared myself to him, but I identified with Jim Taylor. He was a hardworking, everyday football player, and of course, in college, I was a fullback also. So if you wanted to be like somebody, you didn't think maybe you'd reach the echelon of the flamboyance and the you know, kind of outgoing guy like Paul Horning, but I certainly identified with Jim Taylor, who was a rough, tough guy. And in all those playoff games, he was a guy that got the pack. He blocked for Horning, too, so he was kind of the total package. So I really put Bill Brown and Jim Taylor in kind of the same mold. And, of course, Jimmy Taylor got Hall of Fame status. Bill Brown was in our Ring of Honor and got a purple jacket and was all that for the Vikings. But, you know, I don't think I have to tell Viking fans that he was instrumental in most of those Viking early teams in the 60s and the early 70s.
Well, I have a story that I'll try to share with you. One of the very first games, if not the first game I went to, at the old Metropolitan Stadium on the second deck, and we were playing, we being the Vikings, obviously, were playing the Green Bay Packers. And the news was that Jim Taylor was going to be the running back for that game, and that Paul Horning had gotten in trouble gambling or something like that.
Yeah, he was suspended for a year.
Yeah. So this is a true story. We're watching that game, and now we're in the deck that looks right down into the end zone. And it was a tough-fought game, close in score. And Taylor got the ball, and I jump up, and they're going after him, and I'm saying, literally, I said, kill him! You know, bam, knock him down, get him away from the end zone. And I used the words, kill him. And after all the cheers, because they stopped him, and like the guy next to me said, hey, don't you think that's a little bit much to ask somebody to kill him? And I said, oh, I just, you know, meant knock the heck out of him. And the guy said, well, I'm a doctor, and I don't believe in anybody that believes in violence. I said, well, you're watching the game with me. And anyhow, I shut up, and the doctor shut up, and I just will never forget that.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, do you think anybody else has ever done that?
Well, if you ever went to Oakland Raider game or a Philadelphia Eagle game or a Chicago Bear game away, kill them would be probably the easiest word you might hear in the stadium. They were rough fans. I think Viking fans and actually Packer fans are a little more genteel than some of these other groups, especially in the big cities.
It's 9:15 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, a friend you can count on. My guest this morning is Stu Voigt. He is a former Minnesota Viking. And by the way, talking about purple jackets, why don't you tell us what that means?
Well, purple jacket, I think that you get a purple jacket when you're inducted to the Ring of Honor, which is, you see the new stadium and the old stadiums, Metrodome, that's Viking royalty right there. And then purple jackets have gone to coaches, Jerry Burns, Bud Grant, Jim Finks, general manager, also to the likes of Paul Krause, John Randall, Fran Tarkington, Corey Stringer, Scott Studwell, special guys that put in a lot of service to the Vikings and were not only good players, but good in the community. So that's,
do you have one?
I do not have one. I'd like to get one of these days. They make an induction about once every 2 or 3 years. I think the last one to go in was Ahmad Rashad. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So, but let's see, 59, what would it have been? They started in 1961. 61. Pardon me?
Vikings started in 61.
So 50 years later is 2001, right?
2011.
2011. Now, they had a 50th anniversary all-Viking team.
Right.
And relatively few Vikings made it on there, and there were hundreds, if not thousands,
sure,
of people that could have been inducted, or whatever they call it. But now you were chosen as...
I was on the 50 greatest. They called the 50 greatest list. They had a 25-year, years ago, of all-time team, and I was on that. So I've been happy to get some accolades, and I think, looking back, I find my happiness with the Vikings is what a great team was to play for, with a great town, and you look at all the players, and of course, then I broadcast the games after that. That really not a lot of clinkers as far as the players and guys I either played with or broadcast while they were playing. There's a bunch of good guys, and when we have reunions, it's makes you proud that most of the Vikings, you know, just saw Alan Page got a prestigious Medal of Honor is going to be presented by President Trump and. You know, the Fran Tarkingtons and some of these guys that I know and are friends with have done quite well, and that makes me proud. I think this is a team through the, what's now, about almost 60 years in playing. It's some really good people that went on to greater things and always were kind of a shining example to other people in the Twin Cities that these not only were good players but good guys.
Speaking about good, we have an opportunity to talk about the good burgers they have at the quarterback club. They're flame broiled, the only place in town that flame broils the burgers. In addition to that, they have the baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of oozing all over it. That special sauce. Oh, so good. Roasted chicken is another one of the favorites at the QB. They're serving breakfast right up until 10 o'clock this morning, and they are known for their great breakfast, and the prices are so reasonable. As a matter of fact, I had dinner there last night, and I like their dark chicken, and they have plenty of french fries and a nice size drink to go with it, or milk, and it's very inexpensive at the QB, locally owned, locally managed. Stu Voigt is my guest here this morning on KYMN, and one of the things I want to talk to you about, not only what your thoughts are in regards to the where the Vikings are now, but let's talk some stories about Boom Boom, Bill Brown. A lot of my listeners will remember number 30, and like you say, he could run, he could block, and he could pass. But he was just a fun guy. I mean, we've had some great fun together. I have at least two stories, and I know you have more.
Sure.
Give me another story. And by the way, his daughter married Rich Gannon.
Yeah, and Rich was one of the pallbearers yesterday. And Rich is, of course, a fine guy, and they have a couple kids, tall kids. I mean, Shelley, Bill Brown's daughter, was an all-Big Ten, might have been even all-American gymnast, and I think she might have been a cheerleader then for the Timberwolves, and just a great gal. And, of course, we all grew up in literally the players and the kids grew up in the Bloomington area, most of them. So I've known her, and he's got a son, Scott, and a son adopted a couple of Koreans, his son Mick, and
that's Korean, one named after Mick Tingle.
Yeah,
huh?
And so I've known him forever, and you know, the of course, the funerals are never happy.
Who gave the eulogy?
One of the priests there at the St. Hubert's Catholic Church in Chanhassen. And I think it had to be, I don't know if that was Bill's home church, because it was a big crowd. I mean, a lot of people love Boom Boom, because he worked with John Roberts Printing for years and years, but he was a man about town. I mean, this was, what I like about Billy is that even, of course, he looked like a football player. He had the flat top haircut, which was, I don't think he'd worn flat top since 1950, but he had that. He was a chain smoker and a coffee drinker, and I always laughed when I first kind of followed him around, because he was an epitome of a football player. But we had a ritual that he would go on the field before me, and I'd follow him. We'd come up through the steps of the Twins dugout on the field. Billy and Bud Grant did not like smoking. He made all the guys that smoked. Now, in those days, I'd say 75% to 80% of the team smoked. Bud would make them go into the restroom area, which had two urinals and two stalls, and it was meant for about four or five people. And you could imagine, before a game, 30 Vikings in there with their helmets on, just tipped up, smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee. And my first couple of years, I never smoked, but also didn't drink coffee at that time. I'm going, this is pro foot. I mean, some of these guys talk about grizzled old veterans. They're missing teeth, and they got scars. And I'm going, it's a heck of a lot different than college football, where we all kind of looked the same, young guys. And so when he went on the field, Bill would, whether it was 90 degrees out for a preseason game or 9 below zero for a playoff game in the cold weather, he'd have his helmet tipped up, a cigarette and a cup of coffee in his hand. He'd go walking in his full uniform down. As soon as he got to the steps of the dugout where he'd go on the field, deposit both the cigarette and the cup of coffee in the trash can. And when he came back, he had a clubhouse guy give him a cigarette and a cup of coffee. And although, you know, Bud Grant certainly was nervous and doesn't like smoking at all, I love Bill Brown. And, I mean, they put up with it. And that was just the way things were different in, like, let's say, 1970. It was a different game. Guys were not paid the phenomenal amounts that they're paid today. But the joy and the fun and the laughter, and Bill Brown could give it as well as take it. But I would say through Tarkington and Tingelhoff and Grady Alderman, he was the butt of as many jokes from the coaches, and he took it all in good spirit. He could give it out, and you know, he had that raspy voice. He sounded like a wrestler on for Vern Gagne, and he was funny, ha-ha, and funny peculiar. I mean, he was just, if you drew up a football player at 5'11 and a stocky 230, that would be Bill Brown. And he loved everything about pro football and playing football. And I also respect him the most is he played 14 years of running back, which is a lot of running back.
Oh, yeah, that's almost a record.
Most of these guys run out of legs by about 8 or 9 years if they're worked as hard as Bill was. But he lost his job, and as did Dave Osborne, when Chuck Foreman came in 1973. Well, here's a new style back. Chuck Foreman was all that. He was Rookie of the Year and would go on to great things. But Bill and Ozzie were still there, and they're such great mentors for the younger running backs, Brent McClanahan and Robert Miller and Sammy Johnson, all these, and they would help. But Bill Brown, you know, he volunteers, says, well, I want to play. So they put him in as a special teams guy. Well, he was
an old pro
a special teams captain, and he would say the same. Of course, when I was coming in, I had to play all the special teams. You want to, and you got young legs. And Bill Brown always gathered the team there, and his comment was always, okay, now let's ride the wild horse. When I would go like, I still to this day don't know what he's talking about, but he'd growl that out and, yeah, let's go. And watch the films. He wasn't a real good special teams player because he's run short of legs and flexibility. So many times he'd come flying out of there with some guy. He'd dust himself off, and next time didn't bother him a bit. And he just loved it. And you're going like, wow, because after you get to be a starter, it's kind of a demotion to go back and have special teams. You don't have your star players playing special teams, and but Bill, just to get on the field, he loved everything about it. And that's the joy he got of football was something I think rubbed off on me and others, because sometimes it's great when you're scoring touchdowns and playing in the games and the crowd's cheering, but boy, a lot of football practice is mundane and boring and painful, and he didn't look at things that way, and that's probably why he lasted 14 years. Was that good?
My favorite story When I, you know, he was the catalyst of my starting visit with the Vikings after.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And here's how it happened. I was at a game, and I forgot my tape recorder. And, of course, back then, they were big.
Right.
And I'm going, what am I going to do with my visit with a Viking show? Because that's what I use is the sound bites I got from players. So I thought, well, what am I going to do? So I asked Bill. I said, Bill, I have a problem. I do a regular show called Visit with the Vikings at 8:15 in the morning, and I forgot my recorder, so I'm not going to have any sound bites. Can I call you? And we do it over the telephone. And he said, sure, why not? And that was the beginning of Visit with the Vikings.
I'll be darned.
And, of course, you participated in that later on.
Yeah.
And I had virtually every player on there except Alan Page. But the rest of them, you know, it was a fun thing. Of course, I did the perk thing, and I want to talk to you about that later in regards to...
Quattro Ami.
Yeah, that's right, over on 4th Street, a fine restaurant for you newcomers that isn't there anymore.
Closed about 25 years ago? Or
oh, my gosh, longer than that. The Mandarin Garden is there now.
Okay.
So my story is this. We're alone, almost alone, in the locker room because it all cleared out, and... that's when I asked Bill to do that, and we're standing by his locker, which was like around the corner from something. I don't know what it was, but Bud Grant was able to walk out there, and he pulls out a pack of camels, and he puts a camel in his mouth, and he looks all around, and then nobody, like I say, is in the locker room, and he lights up, and I go, hey, I'll take one of those, or I had one, so... We're standing there smoking, and I'm doing this conversation with him, and who do you think walks in?
Bud,
He didn't. Bud Grant did not have to say a word. It was the look. And he gave us the look, and we put out our cigarettes, and I'll never forget smoking in the Minnesota Vikings locker room.
Oh, boy.
That's a while ago.
Well, you know, way back, I would say, and you remember this, and during football games, this is probably in the 60s, so, you know, maybe before, coaches smoked on the sidelines during the game. You'd have George Halas. Coaches would be in coat and tie, usually a top coat if it was cooler out. And you had, whether it be Van Brocklin with the Vikings, George Halas was owner and coach of the Bears, or Lombardi. They would be on the sidelines with a cigarette in their mouth coaching a football game. Now, of course, that would never go over. I mean, that's not politically correct. But a good story about Bill Brown. Later, of course, he was a smoker, and that's fine.
Once again, and we're talking with Stu Voigt, a former Minnesota Viking, number 83, that played in 3 Super Bowls for the Vikings. Yeah. Stu Voigt also is a former broadcaster and worked for KSDP and WCCO as a color man, as they described, you know, you worked with other guys that were play-by-play, but you were the steadfast guy.
Right. I was
the
color
man.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, as you might imagine, with the advent of charity golf tournaments, you have these golf tournaments, and we were in one of my hometown of Madison, Wisconsin, and our local golf celebrity, Andy North, who won a couple of U.S. Opens, had one for Rayovac Batteries, which is located, the headquarters in Madison, bought Bill Brown and a lot of other guys. Well, Bill was, I know he was a smoker, and this was, I think after both our careers were over, but he comes in the locker room, he's going to change into the golf shirt. You have to wear the golf shirt of the tournament you're playing in, and he looked kind of ashen, and I go, gee, what, Billy? He said, I don't feel well, and so he takes off his shirt, and he was trying to quit smoking, so in the era of the nicotine patch, I didn't know nothing about it, but you'd put a nicotine patch on, that might...
One.
Yeah, well, he takes off his shirt, he has 5 nicotine patches on.
Oh, my gosh.
Because he wanted to quit quicker than... I'm no doctor, but I don't think that's good. He goes, really? You know, and his voice, his voice is almost, I think you remember the Crusher from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Voice like the Crusher.
You turkey neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes, so he took him off and he was better, but that was Brown. I think Target and affectionately, and they loved each other. He always referred to Brown as Rockhead, you know, because his head was that one, he had a giant jaw and, you know, he had kind of this flat top haircut, so he kind of looked like the guy you'd want to send into a street fight or collect a debt for you, you know. And And he's just the opposite. He was not a violent on the football field, but off the football field, a sweet guy, kind of a loved to play poker. And I was not a poker player either, but training camp, between you had a morning practice, afternoon practice, and then you'd have a little lunch, and then you had an hour and a half. Well, these guys would have these poker games, and you could just hear them swearing at each other. And they'd play for, at the time, big money, probably a pot of, you know, $200 or $300 bucks. And those days, there was Lonnie Warwick, a lot of characters, Roy Winston, you know all these guys. And, gee, the most spirited practice would be in the afternoon, because either the big loser or the big winner, somebody was mad at somebody. And so they'd, out of no reason, just a hot day, and you just want to get through it. And these guys would be fighting like they're fighting for their lives, and all because of some guy didn't play the right cards or something. Finally, Bud Grant got wise to it and said, hey, no more poker, you know, because that's not good. So you...
And my other story that I enjoy is that I had an opportunity on a couple of occasions to bring in the Minnesota Viking basketball team during off season, and they would take on the Northfield All Stars, which included the late Jed Domeyer and Al Perfbaum and you know good players played for the University of Minnesota guys. And Alan Page even came down to play that, and you know there was a little money involved. We pay, you know, I paid him, you know, the perks.
Sure.
I think it was like $50 a guy at the time, and which sounded like a lot of money, but we had a fundraiser. And Bill Brown, I would play in that game, and I'm not an athlete. And, you know, but I put myself in. I was a coach. And so I went in there, and I got a good story about Alan Page, what he did to me, and Ray Nitschke when I worked in Wisconsin. But Bill Brown could dribble. I mean, he would force you out of the way. You'd say, my God, here comes Boom Boom. You know, he didn't care that you were some, you know, schmuck that is out of shape. Do you remember playing with him?
Well, in fact, we were originally... pretty good story, that we would play up to 100 games, fundraisers, and get paid. I mean, I think I came a little later. The pay was a little, you know, $100 a game or something like that. But you stayed in shape and had fun, and you'd play the local coaches or the Kiwanis or the Rotary or the, you know, the Legionnaires.
Lions
whatever,
Club, the
know.
JCs.
Yeah, anybody to put a team up. Well, we used to funny, of course, we were kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters playing the Washington Nationals, you know, the Capitol of the Nationals, and he would always win and, you know, put on kind of a little show. And, you know, I always thought it was funny from our – but you talk about Ray Nitschke. When I was growing up, they were going to play basketball in Madison. And Ray Nitschke and the Packers were coming. And they were going to play the teachers from the high school, Madison Edgewood, where actually Joel Maturi, and it's kind of the Catholic high school. Well, what happens is here's Ray Nitschke, and here's a guy that I know, a neighbor, and he's going in for a layup, and Ray Nitschke just – follows him, just lays him into the wall, and everybody laughs, and they thought it was funny, and Ray thought it was funny. Well, the guy, of course, he got hit to think it was funny, and he's wobbling around there. But it was all, you know, these were football players playing basketball, which is rough and tough and, you know, not a real skillful game. But Brown was the same way. He put on a little show, and he could dribble. He had some basketball skills. He looked like he wasn't coordinated, but I always can tell if a guy's coordinated or not, that he could really catch passes. I mean, had great hands for a running back. Now, Dave Osborne, number 41, who I was just with yesterday, and could run like crazy, but never had the knack or the natural coordination. He was not the pass catcher at all that Bill Brown was, but a great runner and did the other things. But Bill was, I imagine, in high school and probably in college, might have even played on the basketball team. He was didn't look like you'd, you know, you don't see many 5'11", 230-pound basketball players, especially not anymore. But he was, and the good thing about Bill Brown, you know, it wasn't the money, and you want Bill Brown to show up for something, he always did. And that rubbed off on me, too. He'd say, you know, we got to visit a couple guys in the hospital, and no cameras, no photo ops, just neighbor was sick or somebody wanted to meet a couple Vikings and had some bad luck and in the hospital. You know, Bill would lead the charge, and I think that's something that now, of course, they have community relations guys, and it's community Tuesdays and all that. Well, you know, any day of the week when somebody wanted the Viking to do something or show up or go to a fundraiser, yeah, Bill would lead the charge. He was a very formidable rock of Bloomington. I mean, he was Well thought of. That's why this funeral had so many people there yesterday.
So I don't forget, you mentioned Ray Nitschke. And,
they went to school with Bill Brown at Illinois.
And guess what they did? The week after the Super Bowl. Super Bowl was on a Sunday.
Which one?
The one that the Packers win back in 1965, something like that. And the next Saturday, they came to town. I was a JC. And
in
Tomah, Wisconsin, yeah. And a guy named Hart was on that team.
Doug Hart.
Yeah, H-A-R-T. That's a guy I worked with. And they came to town Saturday after Super Bowl. Imagine that today. Oh. I mean, it's not going to happen. Right. You got all these stars
like
coming in.
$200,000 to pay these guys.
Yeah. So here we are playing this game, and once again, I put myself in the game. And all of a sudden, I'm picked up, literally picked up. You know, with arms underneath my legs and underneath my arms. And I'm going, like, what the heck is happening? And I turn around, and Ray Nitschke took his teeth out.
Oh, God.
And picked me up. And when I turned around and looked at him, wondering what's happening, he's growling at me with no teeth.
Oh, yeah.
The crowd went nuts. They just loved it.
Well, you know, I talked about that Jim Taylor was a hero. Ray Nitschke was also the other hero. I mean, he got to know Ray, and Ray was a character, but... And then my first game I played, the tight end used to have to always block the middle linebacker. That was kind of one of the key assignments. And that day, it was Ray Nitschke was still playing a little bit on his last legs with the Packers. Dick Butkus was playing with the Bears. And who else? They had the guy named Joe Schmidt was playing with the Lions. The middle linebacker was a ferocious guy. And when you look across the line, you see Ray without his teeth. And he had this big nose kind of, you know, and you're going like, holy mackerel. I mean, he was a scary guy in his prime, but out of his prime. But you still had that reputation. You're gonna have to plow into Ray Nitschke, and you're going like, well, here goes nothing. If you want to stay in the league, this is what you're looking at. So you go ahead and full speed. He was a character. You meet him as kind of like Bill Brown. He was a sweetheart of a guy.
Speaking about that big nose, Eddie Schrockman.
His son was there yesterday.
Okay.
Eddie passed away.
Yeah, he had been on my show, and he wasn't feeling good at that time.
No.
And I felt so bad for him, you know, because what was his nickname?
Bozo.
Bozo, yeah.
Because he broke his nose so many times, it was so full of, I don't know, calcium deposits or whatever. I mean, he looked like, Bozo the Clown, and of course, kind of... weird humor in those days in the locker room, but he was a good, you know, he went to school at the University of Pittsburgh with Mike Ditka, and he's a throwback, and him and Bobby Bryant were the cornerbacks, and tough guys. And,
They
made up for what maybe they lacked in speed and flexibility and just combativeness. You know, Eddie was just full go all the time, and of course he was, again, another guy. He was the first guy, him and Bill Brown, barking at each other in the bathroom, smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, which I thought was absurd when I first came to the Vikings. I go, I've never seen a guy.
Oh, a clean-cut guy like...
Nobody drank coffee in 1969, you know.
Well, not nobody.
Not young kids.
Well, I didn't when I was younger, and now I'm addicted to it. I love
me
it.
Me too.
We're going to take a brief break, ladies and gentlemen. My guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, the 95.1 FM and 1080 AM on your AM dial. We're going to take this break and be back and continue our conversation. And, Stu, I'm going to ask you about last couple of years of Bill Brown's life. I know you're very connected, and it will be sweet to hear about that, because he was, like you say, a very sweet guy. We will be back.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Welcome home to Northfield Manor. On the campus of Northfield Retirement Community, Northfield Manor is proud to offer HUD Section 8 subsidized equal opportunity housing for adults 62 and older. Take advantage of all amenities on campus, including our state-of-the-art theater, Imelda's Marketplace, Fitness Center, Main Street Cafe, walking trails, and more. Call today, 507-650-7332. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Thanksgiving's just around the corner, and the Northfield Knights of Columbus want to make sure your holiday is heavy on the gravy, but light on the pocketbook. Turkey Bingo is back at St. Dominic's Church. Come in for a night of fun with family and friends, and try to win yourself a turkey, or a chicken, or a pork pack, or a beef pack. Turkey Bingo is Friday, with free games starting at 6:30 and bingo at 7. Food and beverages will be available throughout the evening. Get in the spirit of Thanksgiving. Play Turkey Bingo at St. Dominic's Church in Northfield.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
How's that for an appropriate break into? Doing the boom boom by Eli Paper. Paperboy, rather. Doing the boom boom. We're talking with Stu Voigt this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, KYMN, out of Northfield. And Stu Voigt is a former Minnesota Viking, played for the Vikings in three of their four Super Bowls, and a very good friend of a fellow that just passed away and was honored yesterday at his funeral, Bill Boom Boom Brown. And we're chit-chatting about the situation that led up to his passing away. Was he, if I remember correctly, wasn't he kind of sick for quite a while?
Yeah, he was sick, and he was in a form of senior living, showed early signs of dementia brought on by the key word now is the CTE, which is kind of a brain injury that brought on near the last couple of years. He had been the situation where he needed round-the-clock care, and he did not speak for the last year, maybe 2 years of his life, so it wasn't a happy ending for Bill. He was he did bring out a lot of events, and I think, as they say, there's with not speaking and responding, he didn't know, but he was taking things in. The CTE, which can come in, it's a brain injury, but can manifest itself in, of course, dementia and forgetfulness, but also in ALS or Parkinson's. So it's something that's the NFL is trying to do something about, but it's really tough to make the game safer. It's a rough game with all the contact and all the practicing and contact and practicing. But Bill suffered from that, and you see in the obituary they're going to send any contributions or honorariums or whatever it was to the Boston, I think Boston University or Boston College is studying the brains of deceased football players, and Bill certainly had that situation going. He wasn't alone. They would say in some of the articles I've read that up to 90% of football players, of course, they're all asked to send their brains in to be studied, and that's the only way they can really, that's how they came up with this.
Wasn't Wally?
Wally Hilgenberg, another business partner, great friend, died of CTE, which caused his final, I think on the death certificate, would be ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, which is when you went through so much as I did with Wally, that it's a horrible disease. But you can get ALS, but you can also, a lot of football players, ALS caused by brain injury through contact football. So
wasn't he one of the first ones to give his brain to science?
Yep. His wife, Mary, they took care of that. And how it started actually was a Wisconsin story. I don't remember Iron Mike Webster, who was a Hall of Fame center with the Pittsburgh Steelers, played in all the Super Bowls. I actually recruited Mike. Mike was from Rhinelander, Wisconsin, came to University of Wisconsin, did a great job there, and then played in the NFL and actually played like Mick Tingoff 16, 17 years in Hall of Fame. They won a bunch of Super Bowls. And then he coached after he had done playing, coached with the Kansas City Chiefs. But then this whole world fell apart, and no one could figure out what was going on. He was not a drinker or a recreational drug user, but all of a sudden he was faded quick, and that's where they had that movie. It's called Concussion. It was about the diagnosis by a doctor in Pittsburgh of what was going on with his brain, because I'm sure there's some books out, and of course the movie, that he had some horrible consequences because of the injuries caused by playing football. And now all of a sudden you see some of these concussion protocols where players will be held out a game or a series and have to go through a bunch of tests to get back on the field. That's all because of these the brain injuries that many players have suffered over the years playing football.
And I see that the NHL has settled with some players to the tune of about $25,000 each. In their lawsuit, the Players Association's lawsuit against the NHL for not warning them about concussions and encouraging them to get into fights. Sure. Have you ever heard of a sport that encourages somebody to get into a physical fight? People like to watch them. That's for sure.
Well, that was part of the draw, and I'm a big hockey fan. We used to watch the old North Stars at the Met Center, which was across the way there from the Met Stadium. But, that's the only, in football, of course, a fight, you're tossed out of the game. But any player that would waive his rights to sue the NHL was given, I think it was $22,000. The NFL has set aside about $1 billion for players. And a lot of the players and some of my Viking teammates have been able to get some money because they're suffering from brain-type injuries. But that's all something that never was even thought of. I mean, you always thought when you played football, chances are you might have a knee injury or a hip injury or a shoulder injury or something like that, but no one looked into the brain. I don't think that would change things for myself. You still want to play football, but it's...
I want to take a final break and then come back. I want to talk about you and your career in regards to playing basketball, baseball, track, and football at Madison.
Right.
The only last player
in the Big Ten
to ever play three major sports.
Yeah.
So you've been involved with that in basketball. Can be a pretty tough game.
Well, and you saw that Joe Mauer retired, the great baseball player, because of concussions.
Yeah, and we'll be back and find out where you're at in your life and your age, etc. We'll be right back. Stu Voigt, number 83 of the Minnesota Vikings, is my guest.
Hey, what you selling?
Fun.
It looks like a lot of fun.
You know it.
Can I give it a test drive?
Absolutely. Just be careful. It has a lot of power.
Oh, man, this is awesome.
Whether you're in the market for a new dirt bike, jet ski, four-wheeler, motorcycle, side-by-side, or pretty much any other fun thing you're looking for, remember Leo's South in Lakeville. We sell fun.
Portable one, the one you want at Leo's South.
We sell fun.
Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. Stu Voigt, my guest here this morning at 12 before 11. Let me just say it's 9:48:55, so we are at 11 before 10. I always thought 10 was before 11. Anyhow, Stu Voigt, let's talk about you personally. Now, you played high school football, basketball, and baseball.
Yep.
At that time, when you were going to – what year did you get out of high school?
Oh, that would have been 65, 66, 67.
You got out of high school three times?
No, that's when I played high school sports.
Oh, okay.
So I've been 68.
The word concussion ever come up?
No, never came up.
Did you ever get knocked out?
You play where you hear buzzing in your ears and you get a little, it seems like it might take a long time, but it's a couple seconds, you're kind of a little foggy and... But nothing. No, I never got knocked out cold.
Okay, so now that's high school, and let's go on to college, where you went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. What position did you play in track, baseball, and or basketball, and football?
Well, in football, I started off as a tailback and then went into being a fullback, but a back for my entire career there. And track, I was a shot putter and discus thrower. And then baseball, I was a catcher. And that, but nobody heard of concussions. I mean, it was, you might get a little dizzy or a little, just hear a buzz or see a couple stars, but, that was it after big collisions. And of course, these were the days that football was, at least the way we played it in high school and in the Big Ten, it was called 3 yards in a cloud of dust, where you're just really the ground game and blocking and tackling and roughhouse football. It wasn't the wide open. Now you see, your quarterback might throw 10, 12, 14 passes a game. Well, my gosh, they throw that in a quarter nowadays. I mean, it's nothing for quarterbacks to throw 50 passes. So it's like 70% running, which is really where the lines are colliding and the tackles are made. And you're not trying to fool anybody. It's kind of just battling over turf. And, the games were 14 to 10, not these high-scoring games. It was a different game in those games, a rougher game, really. And not that, that's good or bad. Now it's kind of a more wide open game. But
no. So, when you said you played tailback, did you play out of the single wing?
No, tailback. The tailback, there was a fullback and a halfback, and then they had the tailback kind of made famous by O.J. Simpson, where he was in the I formation. He would almost, instead, he used to be down with a three-point stance. A tailback just means you're upright and you're, hands on your knees, and there's running back in front of you to block. And
when I played football, we did the single wing.
Oh, yeah.
And the tailback was kind of like the quarterback. Yeah. And but most of the time they'd shift, center to the fullback.
Yeah.
But I remember a run that we were playing in St. Paul. And I remember, I get to run the ball, I was pretty successful.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I get to run again. I was pretty successful. Oh, boy, I get to run it again. And the next thing I know, I was on the sidelines, and the coach was looking at me, "Are you okay?" And I'm going, "Where am I?"
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it knocked me right out. I ran right into a linebacker that just nailed me.
And so, that's the way football was in those days. I mean, there was no attempt. Not that the different plays now. Football is such a hybrid game now. I mean, with the different ways to attack things. When I played tight end for the Vikings, I never lined up differently than 3 feet outside either tackle. Now the tight ends are going in motion. They're split out. The quarterback used to be always behind the center taking the snap. Now many quarterbacks operate the whole game out of the shotgun formation, where they never take a snap from center. It's kind of pitched back to them, and then. So I think it's just, when they say tailback, it's just an alignment. The football game now is so spread out and motions, and pretty soon it'll be like Canadian football, where literally men can go in motion toward the line of scrimmage. And they're, you see also now that you can fair catch a kickoff, and it's changed.
I remember, I don't remember if I asked you this before, but maybe you did. Why does a quarterback lift his leg?
Well, usually that's to signal motion to one of the players. I mean, he'll lift his leg, and then now you see these quarterbacks, they're looking either way and barking signs. You see in college where the entire team will get set, and then they'll look up and
about?
Well, they're getting the play set in. Their plays, they don't have the amplified helmet like they do in the pros. They'll all get up and look at the coach, and the sideline will usually have some hand waggle signals or literally
signs.
Exactly.
That I saw that Gopher game, and I'm going, well, they're telling the other team what their play is.
And usually what they'll have is 2 or 3 guys giving signs, and you got to pick which one. That's just something they do. They all stand up, and they look at the defense alignment, then they stand up, look at the sidelines to get their play call, and off you go. So it's
that ain't like the old days where Tarkenton used to come in and call his own plays.
Yeah, or draw him in the sand. But the funny thing was Jerry Burns, who came from that, he was coach at Iowa, same philosophy here. We're scrimmaging, and you'd be going against Carl Eller and Jim Marshall, myself. So he had to block these guys, and Jerry Burns would say to toughen up, we're going to tell them what we're going to run. And I'm going, oh, my God, it's tough enough when they don't know. If they do know, there's going to be some collisions here. And it was kind of football was a little bit militaristic where, we're going to take our turf, and then we're going to take your turf, and we're going to beat you up, and the toughest guys win, and 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Now today, they come out throwing the football. A guy like Drew Brees, he could throw the ball at first and 10 on his own 1 yard line, or you know, it's all misdirection and fakery and, you know, confusing the defense.
Was it the last game the Vikings played where they got the kickoff and they threw a long pass and made a touchdown? I don't know if that was
sure. Well, yeah. That's happened many times.
Yeah.
And I mean the wide open, you know, they've got different. Whether the quarterback will throw it to a running back, will throw a pass, and it's great. But it's different. It's neither better nor worse than the old days, but it's just different. And I think the NFL, who's usually the, you know, pattern setter, that it's been determined that fans like games that are 34-33 rather than a game that's 10-9 or 10-7 or something like that.
Yeah.
So they encourage scoring.
I had a question there, but then you said that and it just went away. That ever happened to you?
No.
Have you never had, we were talking about concussions, and I got you to the University of Wisconsin. How did your team do in that university?
Not well. I mean, those were the days of the big two and the little eight. It was Ohio State and Michigan and the rest of us. And, of course, in those days there were no bowl games that, if you didn't win the Big Ten, your season was done. There was no such thing as playing, patty cake early schedule. I mean, my senior year we played USC with O.J. Simpson, UCLA, and Oklahoma. I mean, we were losing records all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it was. Then you went home. I mean, there was, now if you win your three non-conference games, you're 3-0, and then you win three games in the Big Ten, you end up 6-5, and or even you can end up being 500. You could be 6-6 or 5-5. And go to a bowl game,
Yeah, I was reading a column yesterday, I think it was, or Monday, and the Gophers are away to be bowl eligible, and I'm going, that's interesting. So why do you think that is? Of course, everything is about money.
Exactly.
I mean, it's money, 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 and so these, and it's a blast, I'm sure, for the guys,
yes, exactly.
The team to
and
go.
And for recruiting next year, and you get your alumni to go to Tampa, Florida for the Weed Eater Bowl, and you're playing another team that usually they'll match them up. You're not going to, the Gophers would never go to a bowl game and play Alabama, who's undefeated. That's in the playoffs. You'd go and play like University of Pittsburgh or something like that. So you all go have a good time. All the players that are down there will get a sweatsuit that says Tangerine Bowl or something like that. And it's all good fun, but that never happened. We talk about college football now. It used to be, it was, not a big, highly paid job to be a coach. In fact, when I was growing up, the assistant line coach for the Badger, Milt Bruin, had 4 coaches. Now they have 20 coaches, but his name was Paul Shaw, great guy. But, my dad was a working man, worked for the DNR, and here's Paul out there in the summer cutting the grass. And you go, being an assistant coach was like being an assistant, the junior high gym teacher, he'd have to coach football, then he'd work in the fire department of Wisconsin, but kind of, guys like, that's not really a job. Now, because players in college can't get paid, not even really a per diem for, food or whatever, some snacks, now these coaches are making millions of dollars because the players who have, some of them are going to school and just, although they're on scholarship, which is great, they have no extra money to buy shirts, so that's a big thing that's going to come down the pike, is that college athletes should get at least, a couple hundred bucks a month for all these expenses they have. Because, a lot of the kids come from, environments where they don't have any money and they're going to school and they're getting a great education.
Don't car dealers kind of help out and loan them a car?
That's
some restaurants.
Sure, that was the old days. But, now if indeed and that goes on, you're suspended. And that's a lot of these kids want to go. They're going to school to get an education, but they're going like, hey, what could be a better job than when I get done is playing pro baseball, pro basketball, pro football, pro hockey. So if that's taken away from them and they don't, colleges are kind of the minor leagues for the pros now.
Oh, I've always felt that.
A lot of kids, now they have some rules. It used to be in basketball, a kid play 1 year and go right to the pros. In fact, I think starting with Kevin Garnett, he went right from high school to playing with the Timberwolves. And, who could blame him? You could always get a college education at your leisure. But, if somebody's dangling, $10 million in front of you, what are you going to do to play a game you love? Sure. So it's never used to be that way. I mean, it used to be, and now, in fact, these coaches in college are making fabulous amounts of money.
Some head coaches make more money than the president of the college.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot more.
Well, that's a funny story. You said Joe.
Well, let's save it till after 10 o'clock,
okay,
all right?
You got it.
This is KYMN Radio. It's 20 seconds past 10, and we'll be back with Stu Voigt, a former Viking, played in 3 Super Bowls, and he is a friend of KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on your AM dial, and, of course, 95.1 FM, The One. I bet I know something, Stu Voigt, that you don't know in regards to that particular tune we just heard. Do you know that Paul McCartney's dad is on the clarinet on that song?
I did not know that.
Now you know. Every time you hear that, you can say to somebody, hey, did you know that McCartney's dad is on the clarinet?
Yeah.
And they'll go, wow, man.
In fact, Paul McCartney just went back, what was the name, in his place in Liverpool, the place he started. I saw something. Well, Paul McCartney's got to be my age. He's got to be 71, 2 or 3.
Oh, something. He's older than that. He's my age.
So he was. He went back to the, I'm trying to think, the Cavern or something it's called, and here he's playing the songs and just came there unannounced. Was cool, really cool that I think it was on that show, James Harden or whatever, James Corden, who's on, an Englishman who's on the late night show there on CBS, and it was pretty cool that he sets up and all these guys come in, and here's Paul McCartney and his band.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
At 3 minutes after 10 o'clock, Stu Voigt and I are talking about different things and all football. And we paid homage to the late Bill Brown, who was buried yesterday after a couple of years of suffering. You know, I was thinking, I know a guy that's probably about 62 that has dementia. And I know a woman that is in her 50s. That has dementia. And I know a woman is in her, she's got to be in her 80s, but looks great. And the other day, she said, hi, how are you? and please tell me your name. And I've known her for 50 years, and I said, Wayne Eddy. She goes, oh, the broadcaster. And I said, yeah. And I said, how you doing, and all that. So obviously she has knowledge of her situation in regards to memory, and she's got that deal where she'll ask somebody who they are. At first, you're kind of like awestruck, you know, and then you get, oh, I get it. And so I'm doing that now when people say, hi, Wayne. And I say, hi, how you doing? And they say, oh, just fine. How about you? And they're wanting to engage in a conversation. And I'll say, you'll have to excuse me, my memory. What's your name? Stu Voigt. Stu Voigt, what did you do? Well, I was a football player. Oh, Stu Voigt, yeah, number 83, I remember you now. And instead of just saying hello and dismissing, I will seek, if I can't remember exactly, I'll seek an opportunity to get the name and association, because I've talked to her. Will say, Wayne, you talked to me for 2 hours. You know, well, sorry about that. You're one of 1,500 or more. So that's the way I do it.
Well, and I would say on the CTE, which is the brain injury situation, it's not just dementia. It's not just forgetting things. The problem is that, irregularities happening because of these brain injuries. A lot of it's aggressive behavior, extreme anger, extreme depression, and it can happen at all ages. I think the saddest case, there was a tight end for the Boston New England Patriots, Aaron Hernandez, who now, just spoiler alert, hung himself in his cell after being convicted of at least 2-3 homicides, had just signed a 4-year, $40 million contract with the Patriots. So you go, what could be better than that? And a good football player, troubled all his whole life. They sent his brain in at 27, and he showed these brain irregularities just because he played college football at the University of Florida, and he played for the Patriots maybe 3-4 years. He played alongside, but a little bit behind the Gronk. Gronkowski was a great player. So it's not like old guys get it. Yeah, I mean, anybody can have it. Now, it can happen with men and women, but, periods of just erratic behavior, whether it be obviously forgetting things, that's kind of the mildest part. I mean, it can be aggressive behavior. It can be unusual things like, with your finances. I mean, then looking back at this Mike Webster case, I mean, pulling one's teeth with the pliers isn't normal.
Who's Mike Webster?
Mike Webster, he's Iron Mike. He's the guy that started this whole concussion thing. He was a Hall of Fame center with the Pittsburgh Steelers from Wisconsin. So I recruited him to go to Wisconsin. But he would manifest his behavior, and he died at 57. He would pull his teeth with the pliers. He would taser himself to get him thinking that he would get his jog his memory, and he would sleep, homeless. Although his wife and 4 kids lived in Madison, all these bizarre things that were happening, and he, of course, no ability to concentrate. And here was a guy that was all Big Ten academic. And was a good player, and of course you got to remember assignments. Then coach with the Kansas City Chiefs, but when this thing hits, it can take a crazy amount of form. It's just not forgetting who Wayne Eddy is. That would be the most mild form. I was with some of these guys yesterday. We talked about Mick Dingloff. He's a mild form of dementia. I mean, he can't remember things. He's as friendly as can be, and one of the he has the most beautiful, warmest, inviting, friendly smile you've ever seen, but. He's got to have attention pretty much around the clock. And his daughter came back from Florida. His wife, Phyllis, takes care of him. So he's in good hands. Not to worry about Mick. But, he has not exhibited any violent behavior or bizarre walking out the door and getting lost. I mean, this isn't just so much more major than just forgetting, who your next-door neighbor was. That's,
Now, have you and Linda ever discussed the possibility that could happen to you?
Oh, sure. I'm part of the protocol now that you do some baseline testing, and you'd get a 4-hour exam from a psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever, and I've taken that, and all players should, and I think they are, to see where you're at right now, where Stu Voigt is at 70. Because Stu Voigt at 75.
When did he turn 70?
August 12th.
Well, welcome to the 70s.
Yeah. Feel good. I mean,
well, hey, the 70s were great in your football career.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now you're 70s
yeah,
old.
Exactly. So
young Stu Voigt, 70 yes, years old.
Well, even at that funeral, we saw some people, and they go, you know, something like, well, I'm 70, and the couple said, you know, yeah, I like you look great for 70. What do you say? You're 70. You know, you look like you're 80. I would want that. But yeah. So it's, yeah, it's
happening.
Oh,
you happened. Do. You do look good.
Yeah, I feel good.
You know. Do you believe people when they say, wow, you really look good?
Compared to what?
Well, people have said that to me. Hey, how you been? You really look good. You know, one guy the other night said, how old are you now? Because I knew him when he was a little kid. And I said, 77. Wow, 77. You don't look so.
I was just saying the same thing.
Oh, I don't take it to heart.
Because no, it's a nice compliment.
Yeah, and
Well, so, you hate to have me.
But you truly do not look 70.
Well, what if I came and said, Wayne, what happened? You know.
Yeah. We've done that in our minds to people that we've seen.
Yeah. So this CTE. I don't want to minimize it. It's serious, and you see. Some of these players that are a lot younger than I am. I remember a guy that played with the Vikings, Brent Boyd. I don't know if you remember that name.
Oh, he's an offensive lineman.
Yeah, he's kind of leading the charge. He's
I think he was one of the first linemen to get $1 million contract.
Yeah. And he, a lot younger than I am. He's at least 10 years probably played with one. Yeah, probably 10, 11 years younger than I am. He's been suffering for years with, where – bright light and loud noises. I mean, you know, everything bothers him to be fallen into depression. He's a bright guy, UCLA guy, and he's kind of on a crusade like, hey, believe me, this can happen at any time. So it's a very serious issue. That's why you see at the sidelines, they have these protocol tents where the guy, he's in the protocol tent, which is 90% is they're checking out the old head to see what's going on. And usually it's like, okay, concussion, that would have never happened even 5-7 years ago. I mean,
so they call it getting dinged.
Yeah.
Have you been dinged?
Yeah, and last time I was, not many times, to tell you the truth, but catch a pass in the Super Bowl against the Raiders, and, you know, they got a George Atkinson, a guy named Jack the Assassin Tatum, and they were some rough guys.
Yeah.
So you catch a ball, and you get up, and not really, I get up, and that's probably only for a split second. It seemed like it was 10, 15, 20 seconds, I get up and I'm going like, wonder which way the huddle is here. It's is it this way or this way? And so, you're a little, and then I'm going, I'm not going to take a knee or raise because I wouldn't give them the satisfaction letting them know that they put a pretty good hit on me. And then you saw the X-rays of the paper yesterday. One guy had my face mask and the other guy was delivering a forearm to the side of the head. So it was a nice hit, but I held on to the ball, which is as long as that's what my credo was. You're going to get hit no matter what, so it only makes it worse if you drop the ball or fumble it. So hang on to it. Take your lick. You know, they get the last shot. You know, main deal, just don't let them get that ball from you. But you get up and you're kind of going, I wonder which way we should go here, And then we got back to huddle, never came out of the game, didn't want, although he saw him in the last couple weeks ago at a reunion, remember Steve Craig? He was back. I don't want him getting in the game here, so I'm carry on here. So that's I think most guys, fear of losing your position or.
How does that work when a coach holds a good player who's done something evidently that wasn't proper one way or the other, socially or on the field, and they hold them out and don't put them in the game at the start of the game, and then they come in on the second down?
Yeah.
Is that all about money?
I think that's all, proving a point or something like that. And now they have in college, they have this targeting rule there. If you hit a guy in the head, target that head, you can be thrown out of the game. I mean, if it's malicious and you're doing it, they say on unprotected receiver. In other words, if he's caught the ball and he's running and you just hit him, you got to bring him down. So you got to bring him down, but you don't hit him in the head. So it's kind of a cheesy rule because it's all based on how they see things. And, of course, things are happening so fast that they got some rules there. I mean, but as far as discipline, that
– I'm talking professional ball, And so you got let's say you, just for the fun of it, okay, you're the starting tight end. And you got caught smoking a cigarette in the locker room and Bud Grant – I'm talking about nowadays, not then – says – you're not starting on Sunday. Now, the game starts, receive, first play, some Steve Jordan goes in. Mm-hmm. Now it's the second play, and they say, okay, go on in.
Right.
Okay, is there a fine by not starting? Or do you get paid more money by starting?
Well, you could have. It all depends on the contract.
Yeah.
But that would seem to me. I mean, playing with Bud Grant, that wouldn't be.
Well, I'm talking nowadays.
Yeah. Oh, they have all kind, and it happens in college. And there's different things where, I see in college hockey, if you get in a fight and get a penalty, you have to sit out the first period. There's some rules by the league, but now you see, which is interesting in NFL, you can have even not get a penalty on a play. And the NFL said the other team will send the play in to the NFL, and they could fine you even though there's no call on the play. They could fine you. You see these fines all come out Monday or Tuesday. Guys will be fined, $20,000 easily for a hit that was not even picked up by the officials. So it's
well, what I'm getting at is that if you're the starting tight end and you do something that the coach doesn't like, whether it's off the field or on the field, and he says, you are not starting this game, does that have an effect on the monies that that guy would have received because he started?
Oh, it could, if that's written in your contract. All
yeah,
contracts
that's what
are
I
different.
Wondering.
I never had that. There's never nothing such as that.
But nowadays they say, okay, if you start, you get a $20,000 bonus that day or something like that. If you don't, you aren't going to get that. So you strive to be a starter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some of the rules and regulations, and I'm talking college and pro. I mean, there's different things. You know, a coach has to remain in control of the team. So, I mean, you can't but we've seen all these, these celebrations here. And I've seen it before in the New Orleans Saints game against the Rams. A guy scores a touchdown. He sees where the goalpost is. He goes underneath the goalpost, pulls out a cell phone that he must have planted there. And he's like phoning home or something or phoning his agent. Well, he gets fined $25,000. Well, gee, in my day, that's what you're making a year. But he goes, oh, yeah, it was, the shtick I was pulling, it was worth it. The guy goes, okay.
Yeah, and
$25,000 gone. I'm was, going like my
he
gosh.
Was emulating his hero, I think.
Oh yeah,
somebody was a Terrell Owens or something did that before.
The funniest one was Randy Moss way back with Green Bay kind of does the fake moon, and I mean, pretty clever. I thought. I'm sure
I thought
he got
it
fine.
Was. Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny.
And of course,
too.
You're doing it at Lambeau, which I'm sure these Packer fans are just their veins in their neck are just bulging out.
And, of course, one of the players that was on Monday night or Thursday night or Sunday night football that Randy Moss was covering went up to where they were seated, out on the field, and did the fake moon to Randy Moss, and Moss laughed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? A lot of Viking fans had a big distaste for Randy Moss, and I think by his being on television and doing a broadcast shows his intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, me included, have forgiven him.
Well, I covered most, I think every game Randy Moss played on the radio, and I didn't have to forgive him. He never would do local, we had a player of the game basically on CCO, so he'd come in after the game, answer, 2-3 minutes of questions to make $300, which to me, he would never do that. Of course, Chris Carter would never do that. Robert Smith would never do that. They were kind of for the national. But covering Randy Moss, I just appreciated this supreme talent. Some of the stuff he did, I mean, I could kind of smile. I mean, he was a new wave. They're going to do it his way. He was going to wear his hair a certain way. He was play when he's going to play. But, boy, watching him, I mean, that to me, that made the interest in the game. He changed
great.
The game. I mean, and him, you remember those years? I mean, that's 1998. You have Chris Carter, you have Randy Moss, you have Robert Smith, you have Culpepper. I'm going, you broadcast those games. It benefits me because the games are great. You want to watch these games. I mean,
were you ever broadcasting a game that a missed field goal in the last second created a loss?
Well,
was it,
I think,
Anderson?
You're kidding me. Yeah. 1998, Gary Anderson, best guy in the world.
Let's take one brief break and then set up that whole season in regards to his kicking, all right?
All right.
We'll be back in just a moment right after this important message, and we will be back in 30.3 seconds.
The Kenyon Muni is ready to get this holiday season started. They always have great specials on beer, wine, and now to the end of the year, they have a great special on Barefoot wines. 750 milliliter bottles for $5.99 and mags for $10.99. Stock up now and buy six bottles or more, and you can save an additional 10%. The Kenyon Muni has booked Brian Anderson for the night before Thanksgiving, one of the greatest party nights of the year. Come and join the fun and have a great time November 21st at the Kenyon Muni.
Well, I have to tell you, Stu Voigt, number 83, Chainsaw, three Super Bowl appearances with the Vikings, my guest this morning, and I can now add a good friend.
Thank you.
Oh, I could have done that years
ago. Absolutely, you could have. And gave me my start in broadcasting.
Yes.
A little visit with the Vikings, my little tape recorder. And
down at the training camp, and then I sent a letter of recommendation to WCCO to hire
you. Yes,
you
did.
And you got hired. And I did it for many years, and we're going to talk about that. But I have to tell you that Randy Moss, Chris Carter, who's the other fellow that you mentioned that was hard to get?
Robert Smith.
Robert Smith. I can't say Robert Smith. I take that back.
And he's doing broadcasting on TV now.
But Green.
Dennis Green, yes.
Those three people made me quit doing Visit with the Vikings.
Oh, really?
I thought they were great players and a good coach, but attitude, it's just...
The attitude is changing. I mean, I think it, and I, you know, I was broadcasting games and did the did the Dennis Green show, you know, for all his time here, and it was, you know, he would get $500 for, I think, 3 minutes, and I would laugh with, I think I was working with Joe McConnell in those days, and Jay, you know, the same... You go down the locker room before the game, and he'd give you nothing. You know, your reporter, you want to, you know, I'm not asking him to give me the first five plays of the game and what he thinks, but, you know, they're good, we're going to try hard, they're going to try hard. I'm going like, geez, the same thing you said last week, you know, and then a couple times I had to laugh that I wasn't indignant, but he goes, hey, where's my check from last week? I'm going, that's not my department here. You know? He was a character. And he, little chip. I think all of those guys had little chips on their shoulders, which sometimes players play better with a chip on their shoulder. You know, marvelous players. You know, now Randy Moss is on TV. Chris Carter does Big Ten football. He's on the Big Ten Network, and I think some college football. Randy Moss, Chris Carter. You know, Denny Green was one of the pioneers of the game. Just what happened? We honored him. Well, he went in the Ring of Honor at the last or second last Viking home game, and we saw his career, and he did. He brought in...
Posthumously.
Well, yeah, and he, his wife was there. Vikings did a nice feat for him, but to his credit, he brought in, you know, the Tony Dungys, this guy Tomlin, the coach at the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was kind of a mentor for a lot of black coaches that became head coaches, and so that's something. I mean, these guys, the Vikings, have something to be proud with, but... Were they a little bit difficult to deal with? Yeah, they all were.
And you know what? I just loved Chris Carter as a player. He was so good. He taught the NFL how to catch a football and keep his toes in bound.
Absolutely.
I just loved him.
I've covered him when I was doing the Vikings. I was also doing the Badgers at Ohio State. He was like a man playing among boys. I think he got suspended for a senior year for taking some money from his agent and, and had a kind of a less than auspicious start with the Eagles. We finally got him for $100, and which was the greatest deal ever. But he was so well advanced of any college receiver. I'm kind of going, I was also covered Anthony Carter in those days. He played at Michigan. Chris Carter, I mean, like against Wisconsin, was pretty good. He could do whatever he wanted. And he did, and, had to head that attitude. And big guy, I mean, 6'3", 210, which he was one of the first of the bigger receivers. It used to be receivers were 6 foot, 180 pounds, you know. Now he would muscle these guys around and good, tough guy downfield. And, you know, but he would march to his own drummer. He wouldn't, I would see him, I'd always get my nose out of joint a little bit. He'd catch three or four touchdown passes and come on, you're going to be the player. Nope. And then he ended up getting my buddy, Mike Morris, the superstar to be my, he had four snaps for, extra points and a couple punts. And come on. And Mike, of course, is great.
Or
Chris Walsh.
He had to get
somebody. And I think the players, the people listen on radio go, well, geez, to Chris Walsh, he didn't hardly get in the game, but such is radio.
Greg
Coleman?
Yeah, I got him started in broadcasting. I don't know if he would remember that, but he replaced you.
Sure.
And now, of course, he does sidelines.
Right.
And very prophetic. Is that the right word? What I mean? He does his little thing before the game. I kind of like that.
Oh, we love him. He's a talker, though. He's the preach, they call it. Him and Eleanor, they're our good friends.
So who's that bald-headed guy with the earphones that follows everybody around and runs out on the field when somebody's hurt when you watch the game on television? There's the bald guy. He stands near the coach.
On the staff?
And he's, I think he might be the...
A trainer. Oh, Sugarman. The trainer, probably.
Was he a bald guy that
is
always in the picture?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the trainer. That's the guy you want out there. He's the head trainer. He's
Okay. Okay, I just wondered because,
I thought the bald guy you're talking about because Ben Lieber,
he's
on sideline reporter, too, for KFAN at the games.
Being a former tight end for the Minnesota Vikings and a running back for the Wisconsin Badgers, do you think that Bronkowski is the greatest tight end ever?
Ever.
You do?
Yep. No question about it. I think he's amazing. I think he's playing with an amazing quarterback, so that I'll be the first guy to say who benefits by having a great quarterback. Tight end should always raise their hand because this Gronkowski is playing with Tom Brady, which, he's going to get the ball. They got a wide open offense. They've also had who also benefits by having good wide receivers. When you have Sammy White on one side and Ahmad Rashad on the other, it's good for the tight end. It's good for the quarterback. It's good for the offensive team. So that benefited me. But Gronkowski's 6'6", 265 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, big guy, willingness to block. I mean, most tight ends now, that's just that, the blocking is, if you can block, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Go out for passes. A lot of them are big college basketball players that, big 6'6 guys will jump and, they're going against a 5'10", 5'11" defensive back. Well, throw that ball up and these guys will catch it. And they do, Kyle Rudolph. But Gronkowski is probably the other great tight end, I would say, way back when in the time dominated would be Mike Ditka, who's a tight end but also could catch and block. And there's been a lot of great tight ends, but the position now has changed. They'll either get a one big guy that weighs 285 pounds, and he's a tight end by number only. You get in and block, and maybe if nobody will cover him, so he'll catch a ball. But some of these guys, like a Gronkowski, he's a marked man.
He's great,
and a character, too.
Do you watch E60?
Yeah.
Did you see the one where they had a guy on that is now weighs like 650 pounds?
No.
And, well, they repeat him, so you're going to have to look it up. He actually, as a college player and in the pros, played at like 300 pounds as a quarterback.
Whoa.
Just huge. And now he's out of control, and he's trying to get it under control, and that's what it's all about.
You play quarterback in the pros?
Yeah.
It's not that Jamarcus Russell, is it?
I don't know.
He was number one draft choice of the Raiders, who was a washout and didn't...
I'm sorry, I'm not going to remember his name, but when they showed film clips of him in college and in the pros...
Who do you play for in the pros? Do you remember?
No, I don't. Okay. They repeat it. You can.
Yeah,
pick it up.
I think I know.
But I mean, you looked and you thought it was a. It looked like a offensive guard or an offensive tackle, but bigger.
Yeah.
And he's a quarterback. That was quite an interesting story.
Things have changed. Remember, you remember way back, and we talked about the 85 Bears when Refrigerated Perry. My gosh, a guy weighs 320 pounds. Unbelievable! Look at this guy. Wait, now. You get on the roster, if you're in the offensive line, you don't weigh 320. You're determined to be, he's pretty small. He weighs 301. Oh, boy, I don't know. He's kind of small for the position.
Were you ever on a Viking team that the offensive line generally guards and tackles and the center had their own little thing like other teams have had where they have a nickname and hang together and they blah, blah, and go out for dinner together and do all that? Was there ever an offensive line that was like that?
No, of course we had the defense line, the Purple People Eaters, but no, I mean that was... Then it came with, I think, with O.J. Simpson, Buffalo, they had the electric company. No. Usually that was one of the first where offensive linemen by description are not outgoing. They're the kind of the strong, silent type. So.
And you know what? They were some of the more pleasant to interview. Of course, my interviews wasn't about football. It was about the individual. Oh. And so they, you know, it was more interesting probably for them to have that kind of a conversation as opposed to
absolutely
who did you block on the touchdown in the fourth quarter or something.
The offensive line I played with Grady Alderman,
general manager
of Denver, and I actually took his job with the Vikings as broadcaster and assistant to Mike Lynn for a couple of years. You know, Milt Sunday did the Gophers and very bright and girls basketball coach. And, of course, Mick was a broker and very sharp. And Ed White is one of the more artistic guys. Here's probably the biggest guy on our offensive line, probably weighed 270. But now he does amazing sculpting and painting. He lives in Julian, California.
He lost a daughter, didn't he?
Well, yes. And then he also had his place. He had talked about these California fires. The fires now aren't in the San Diego area, but years gone by, he collected all these great sculptings, and he's just, you wouldn't think a guy like that big would be an amazing artist, but he's amazing. I mean, to where people are buying his stuff, and he's getting recognized. So you go like, that's these thoughtful guys, and they don't need a lot of, get a little pat on the back once in a while, but contrasting with our defensive line, who are characters, and I love them. You know, I mean, once you're around Carl and Jim, I mean, these guys are free spirits, and they could be hang gliding, or Carl Eller would wear a coat with a wolf head on top of it, you know, and these guys all got along. That was the beauty of the Vikings, but totally different, you know. I mean,
And Ed was the NFL champion in arm wrestling, and he came to Northfield. And we were out at the corner bar in Dundas, and a guy, the late Ted Reavers, a farmer, and Ed got into an arm wrestling contest. You don't have any idea who kind of started that.
Uh-oh, Wayne.
But the farmer won.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. It was cool. And also, have you ever been to his house when he lived in Rosemount?
No, never was out there. I knew he lived in Rosemount because him and a guy named Dean Talifas, who was his neighbor, was a player for the North Stars, went to Wisconsin, a buddy of mine, but I knew he was out there. But his place in Julian, California, burned down, and I guess it's amazing. That I've seen some of the sculpting and all that, commissioned by Nike and the NFL to do things for different awards. And
well, he designed his own home in Rosemount. It was cool.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Quite a guy. 10:33 on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and Stu Voigt is my guest. Stu Voigt is a former Minnesota Vikings, played in three different Super Bowls for the Vikings, and also had a wonderful career. And semi-retired, would you say?
I'd say more than semi-retired. Retired.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay. So
Wayne, I was going to tell you that story about how things have changed in pro football, and I used to give a lot of talks and speeches of the big business of football. Well, you talked about salaries and all that. I remember, and we talked about somebody making more than the president of the university. The greatest line, which I always use, is telling how big football had gotten, and it's, you'll see that it's dated. Years ago, I'd say, you know, pro football has gotten big, and Joe Namath, in about 69 or 70, signed a four-year, $400,000 contract. I mean, that's $100,000 a year, and usually it's a make good. In other words, you got to make the team. And somebody said, Joe, you're making more than the President of the United States. And he said, well, I had a better year than the President of the United States. And that's typical Joe Namath. He was a guy who could walk around in a mink coat and living in New York and Broadway Joe, because he got the one Super Bowl where they beat the heavily favored Colts.
I remember going against,
I think, Earl Morrow, was a stodgy old Earl, who was a wonderful guy, just passed away last last year and got to be a great friend. But, I mean, it was Broadway against, you know, some old Earl went to Michigan State.
Crew cut.
Exactly. And, you know, sweet guy. But, you know, and they probably could have played the Colts three more times and the Colts would have won all three games. But it's just like when the Vikings in the first Super Bowl, they were 16, 17-point favorites over the Chiefs. I mean, unheard of.
I know.
That, and I was at college. I go, like, but God, the Vikings.
Well, it was like the Gophers game, was it a week ago where they were 9.5-point favorites?
Against Purdue, yeah. Yeah. So that's why they play the games. And Kansas City watched that game. And Kansas City just had these real big guys up front. So they couldn't, Viking offense couldn't do much. And Ursula McBee missed the tackle. And the game was like, you know, 19-7 or something like that, but a couple plays here and there. But, you know, that's why what makes football so great. You never know. I mean, that's like a Viking Bear game this Sunday night.
Oh, that's good.
The Bears are good.
We're going to discuss that.
Okay.
The first part of the season, the last half of the season. I'm looking forward to that on what you think about the season so far and in the future, because you are an observant individual that, of course, knows more than I do. But in other areas, we were following your career in high school and in college. You're a three-sport guy, last one in the Big Ten to do that. And then, of course, you went on to become a professional football player. I get the impression that most football players on the professional level love basketball almost more than football. What's your take on that?
Well, I certainly did. That's, you know, I had to give up basketball because I wanted to concentrate on track, and there was basketball during the winter, so I never got my fill of it. So I was the first guy with these Viking teams sponsored by Hams early, and then because of incidents off the court.
Tell me about, you were the first what?
Oh, no. We used to play, we were sponsored by Hams Beer.
Okay.
The Viking team, and we're purple jerseys with the Hams Bear there. But
would you travel then to different towns?
Oh, we'd play, we got road trips. We'd play 10 games in like 8 days, twice on Saturday and Sunday.
And it was
your
pay?
$100 a game.
Well, that was pretty decent at the time, wasn't it?
Kept in shape, and these were full court games.
And they gave you some Hams beer?
Hams beer. You'd be in the Northfield, and you'd go to the quarterback club and after the game, and you'd have some beers and eat some roasted chicken and find your way home.
Well, you're two-thirds right there. They don't serve beer.
Yeah. Well, nobody, I don't know. Is there Hams beer anymore? I don't.
Yes, there is. As a matter of fact, I'll give a little place a plug. The King's Place on Highway 50 in, starts with an M, Meesville.
Meesville, yeah. Well, King's Inn were the good burgers.
Yeah.
Across from a neat little stadium. Sure, I've been there.
Yeah, okay.
On my way down to Treasure Island, which I heard a great concert. I heard Lady Antebellum and Darius Rucker.
Antebella, I've heard. But
Darius Rucker, who's he?
Who's
he? Getting close. Who's he? Hootie. He's Hootie and the he's Hootie of the Blowfish.
Oh, the Blowfish, okay.
But he's a country singer now.
Okay.
And it was really good. Outdoors, they had about 25,000 people, but
do you remember the concert that you went to? You and
Linda?
Linda and my cousin Dale and Sherry Newman, and we met at the Carlton.
Oh, God. I love the Carlton. That's way better. Who was on? I mean, Oakridge Boys?
Yes.
Oh, I've seen them three or four or five times.
I don't know who they are at the time.
They were great friends. I was talking about dementia issues. Great friends. I got to know them through Matt Blair. Somewhat became great friends with the Oak Ridge Boys.
Okay.
And now Matt's suffering a little bit. So
I'm in the bathroom at the urinal, and this guy walks up to the one next to me, and he's got hair down to his tailbone.
Is that Robert, the singer?
Robert
Lee?
One of the guys.
Oh, yeah. He's a guy who used to live in a tent. And
I mean, it was the longest hair I've ever seen on a man.
And a long beard. And,
and a long beard. And I'm, you know how you're standing at a urinal. You can't help but look. And I say hi. I had no idea who he was.
I'm trying to think of his name. Robert Lee. And he's a character. Yeah.
And so then, you know, later the concert started. And I go, well, I just stood next to that guy over there.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, back in history, was that not a fun
place?
Well,
you were there, yeah.
I'd go there all the time. Sometimes you have the dinner show,
yeah,
which was great. But other times, by myself, I'd just sit in the balcony there, and I saw, you know, Hank Jr. and geez, there's
yeah,
more.
I went to that
the guy,
one.
Oh, Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Oh, I went to that one, too. Well, one of those that you were with. I don't know
yeah,
which one
well,
it was.
Those were home games, yeah. And then they have some.
Remember the Paul Revere and the Raiders had the 57 Chevy?
That was his organ, yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
But I love the musical act. Sometimes the comedians weren't as funny, you know, so that. To me, the comedian should open up, then you have your musical act. But so that was like a home game for me. I probably lived, was right there by the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived 200 yards away from that place.
Kind of by Kent Herbick?
Oh, no.
If I got the right name, the guy that played baseball
Kent
for the
Herbick,
Twins?
Yeah, well, he's a Bloomington
didn't
guy.
Didn't he live there too, didn't he, in that area?
Well, he was from there. He didn't have to. We all lived in apartments, usually around the stadium.
Oh.
So, I mean, I'd wander down. That was like... Norma Cheers. I mean, I was there. I could see, you know, two nights in a row, I'd see the same group.
Okay, Norma Cheers. What's up, Norman? You know, I was thinking with the Egan facility that they built.
Have you been there yet?
No.
And take you there. It's wonderful.
Will you take me there?
Sure.
Okay, because I don't want to apply for credentials or anything.
Well, they've got a museum. They've got a training Twin City Orthopedic. They've got a big... training center, but also a clinic, and I mean it's the eighth wonder of the world. It's going to be developed into. Of course, they got a stadium there that holds maybe 5,000. You know, Lakeville South could be playing somebody in the playoffs there as we speak. I mean, they have a game of the week with lights. They got all. It's amazing.
And Farmington Tigers were the first team ever to play there against whomever they played against.
A little bit of history. When I started with the Vikings were at Southtown, which is on Penn and 494, when they left that place, because you know they had so many few employees, that got taken over by a Radio Shack. They moved down to France Avenue. Now, after they moved from France Avenue to Winter Park, that France Avenue became a crematorium. And now Winter Park, I just drove by there the other day, coming back from Boom Boom's funeral. They're doing something there. That's a prime piece of real estate. So these. The Wolves are sharp guys, and they're this development out in Egan, which is the old Northwest Airlines Training Center, is fabulous now. But you see the plans, I'm going like,
holy
they
moly.
They must be like Laughlin, Colorado.
I was thinking that maybe some of the Viking players may buy a home in Northfield or in the area, you know.
Well, they probably have already.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I mean, changed the dynamics. I mean, Egan is...
40, it'd be about 30 minutes away.
Absolutely.
At the most.
Well, the money they make, they can have a place in Northfield and Zumbrota and back home and Monte Carlo, whatever.
We are going to take a break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Stu Voigt is my guest, number 83, The Chainsaw. Right after these times out. This is going to be very brief.
Don't miss the Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Up to 200 vendors, 4 speaker stages, giveaways, and more. The Healthy Life Expo this Saturday and Sunday at the Minneapolis Convention Center. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Do you have an old junk or car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junk or vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair, 10:43 on our clock, and it's a beautiful Tuesday morning with plenty of sunshine, but it's cold, and I'll tell you what, I was not ready for single-digit temperatures without any snow, but evidently it's going to get warmer tomorrow. You know, I was just thinking, Stu Voigt, I think you may be the person that I've had on my show more than anybody else.
Well, I hope so.
I forgot about that. I think of Al Cui and other things, and then again, well, you've been coming down to my show since I started it back in whenever it was. So,
absolutely,
congratulations.
I take that title proudly.
I will buy you lunch.
Thank you, sir.
Where are we going to go?
Quarterback Club.
I love it. The Minnesota Vikings. Let's talk about the Vikings before their bye week and then after that. So I don't know if you got the memory. We don't have a chart in front of us who they played and when.
Sure.
But what is your thought? I just remember when it was 3-2-1.
They're 5-3-1. They've got a good team. I think their better days are in front of them. But unfortunately, the schedule gets very tough now. I mean, you've got the Bears on Sunday night. Then you come back, you've got the Packers here on Sunday night. Then you've got the New England Patriots there. And you've got the Seattle Seahawks there. And you come back with Miami, which, you know, they've got a winning record, but I don't count them as a tough team. But they all, as we figured out when we played Buffalo here, we got beat by a team that's been killed. And that may be, I hate to be forecasting things, but that game and the tie against Green Bay may keep us out of playing at home for the playoffs. I think we're going to have some success. And then the last game of the year is the Bears at home, and the Bears are improved. They're 6-3. They're a good team. They got a quarterback that's Mitch Trubisky that last year was first year looked terrible. You know, you go like, man, all of a sudden he's growing up. He threw for 350-60 yards last week in a big win, and they got the big time defense. They spent a lot of money, got this Khalil Mack, who's a defensive specialist, defensive and defensive linebacker, pass rusher. He's the best. He's got leads the league in sacks. He's one sack ahead of our Danielle Hunter, who's a good player too. But they're for real. I mean, down there on a Sunday night, Bears have been down for so long, and they've got a good, solid coaching staff, and they're starting to believe. They got, they're the top defense in the NFL or the NFC, and we're number two. And they got a pretty good offense. Big game. We're 4-point underdogs right now, so that tells you that. The bettors think that the Bears have the edge, at least playing at home. But I think it'll be a hard-fought game. Interesting with them, they talk about kicking, and their kicker missed four kicks. The Bears guys, four kicks, all hit the goalpost.
I mean, and you couldn't do that
in a million years.
Yep.
And they're still keeping them. You know, we've had our kicking problems. You talked about that '98 Viking team, Gary Anderson. Never missed a kick all year round. If there's a better guy you'd meet in football, I don't know who it'd be, misses his final kick. Another Anderson, Morton Anderson, kicks one for the Falcons. We were like 15.5-point favorites that game to get in the Super Bowl, and we don't get in. And
were you broadcasting either of those games?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
And what's it like as obviously I wasn't listening to the radio when I was at the game, but who – when that happens, how did whomever you were teamed up with at the time, who gives the feeling of jeepers creepers? Is it you or the color man or the play-by-play?
He has the first call. I'll do the analysis or go off on whatever I have to talk about. But you just assume. I think the game, my analysis was, that's when we took a knee at halftime. We were ahead at halftime. But that season, we were smoking guys. We were ahead at halftime, like 28-7 or something like that. We're up maybe. I think they got a touchdown before the half, and then we took a knee rather than try to get Moss down.
Well, explain that because I always thought that was the dumbest thing they could do with the clock and with the receivers and the quarterback club. They could have had four plays
exactly, and I think. We were an attacking-type football team. We would, go for it. I mean, we were just, had all the weapons, and a big weapon being Randy Moss. If nothing else, throw the ball downfield. If he doesn't catch it, we get an interference call. Yeah, we get 3 points or something like that. Well, we didn't do it. We took a knee, played it safe, played it conservative. So we're going into halftime. We may be up by seven. I'm going like, Atlanta, geez, this is too close for comfort. Then it got closer and closer, and then we're going like, geez, We weren't literally, my thought was, we weren't used to being in a game that was up for, being contested late in the fourth quarter. And all of a sudden that great offense was not the same offense and came down to kickers. And, I said, we haven't played well, but here goes our guy. And I'm thinking that, I think it was Joe McConnell calling the game and great play-by-play guys since passed away. And, I don't think he hit the goal, but he just missed it. I'm going like, wow, that you could, you know, all year round, you would say that's an easy three. It wasn't like a 58-yard kick. It was like a 41-yard kick. And, gee. And they come back, they win. And, of course, they got, Falcons got smoked to the Super Bowl. And I thought that was our best team I've ever broadcast, not played with, but broadcast. That was, you know, in 85, we were 87. We got close when Darren dropped one on the goal line. But that's how fickle the football gods are. I would have never thought Gary would miss that, and I never thought we'd lose that game. And taking a knee, that got people really soured on Denny Green. Then.
Yeah,
it was like,
including
you know,
me.
We've been going for it all the time.
Mm-hmm. That was Gary Anderson.
Yeah.
Did you ever how about Morton Anderson?
What about him? He's the one that kicked the field goal for the Atlanta Falcons. He was a kicker, so.
Well, guess what? The kid that I had as a exchange student from Denmark, who I got.
You didn't tell me that. Okay.
Yeah, well, this kid ended up in the television world in Denmark and radio. And Morten Andersen asked him, Jesper Elming, to join him on his induction into the Hall of Fame.
Really?
In Canton.
I think you told me that.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, I didn't tell her.
Yeah.
And that's the lady driving a car down Division Street right now. Anyhow, I was very proud of the fact that this guy is into American football and learned play. He was a kicker for the Northfield Raiders.
Sure.
Jesper, and he missed one that lost the game. And
didn't
win the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's get back to football, the Bear. A lot of games, it comes down to the least likely. You know, usually it's a guy in the, I always get a kick out of kickers, they're kicking in that net, and they're kind of paying no attention. Well, what's, you know, what defense are we playing, or what's the quarterback thinking? They're going like, oh, I may have to get in here, you know, so they'll warm up a little bit, then they'll pace, and, you know, when they're lining up for the kick, the kicker's always to himself. And then more likely at the end of the game, what they call icing the kicker, where he's just about to kick and he's getting all set and takes those two steps to the left that he's gonna, and then the other team will call timeout and you go like, these guys usually, other than the only one who didn't have that fragile psyche would be Fred Cox, the old straight on kicker. He would nothing to bother Freddie. And, but these kickers aren't really football players. They have been hit and they haven't been sweating. They're just waiting for their one or two opportunities. And if they don't get it, they can just feel the hot breath of all their teammates going, that little son of a gun. You know, you miss that kick, now that cost me $50,000 or something like that.
Do you recall, was Freddie Cox your kicker all the years you were on the Vikings?
No, he was a kicker probably 7 or 8 of the 11. A guy named Rick Danmeyer came in and kicked near the end, and Rick did a good job, but Freddie was...
Are they really ostracized? The kickers?
Well, sure. Your practices, other than special teams practices, which are just a small part of your practice, you won't even do any special teams Thursday, Friday, you know, Saturday's kicking game. Well, you know, near the end, Fred wouldn't even come to practice. He was a chiropractor up in, on the way up north there. So early years, he would snap for the quarterbacks during practice. I mean, dummy drills where, you know, they need somebody. You know, now they use a ball boy or a equipment man. But Freddie, you know, who was a good football player when he played at the University of Pittsburgh, he played with Schrockman and Mike Ditka. But when he's kicking, he looked like the, you know, if you want to race one guy in the football field, you probably want to race Freddie Cox. He got a little portly there near the end.
Yeah. I'll never forget in Mankato, towards the end of training camp, I was there, and I was having the food was fantastic in Mankato, and I was having dinner after practice with Fred Cox, and I think Mick Tinglehoff, and the word came down that they cut Bobby Bryant on the last day of practice, and they both commented what a, I won't use the language they used, what a bad deal that was to keep a player like Bobby Bryant as fodder.
Yeah.
And then cut him.
Right.
Were you there at that time?
I was there.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
And the problem is there, you say, it's up to the team who they want to keep. But usually with the veteran players, if you know what Bobby Bryant can do, so if he wants to hook it on with another team, you probably pay him the courtesy to give him a couple weeks so he can maybe make a deal. But there's more players at that, the last cut, there's more players floating in the system that, you know, and I think that was Bobby's last time with the Vikings. But yeah. And to go through training camp, which is tough on younger players, let alone, I think Bob played 12, 13 years as a cornerback, which is unheard of.
Well, the thing is they used him. Sure. To teach the guys that were going to replace him, yeah. Not telling him when they. But anyhow, one thing that I can always say is that I can fill his shoes, Bobby Bryant.
He had to wear shoes one time?
Yeah, we had a softball tournament, and he had an extra pair of softball cleats, and it was the same size. Well, I don't have the same size anymore, but at that time, same size as him, so I wore his cleats in an all-star game in softball. Gosh, you make me think of so many fun things that I've
interesting.
Done.
We had a reunion. Bob was back. I mean, you talk about a slender. He looks great shape. I mean, he's unlikely, and he's mild-mannered guy, and he was a well, he could get fired up as a football player, and he broke about every bone in his body over the years, but he'd keep coming back for more. He was a tenacious, good cornerback. I mean, he played, now those guys don't play that long, but he played a long time just on willpower.
We have one final break here, and then let our listeners know what you think, because you are more observant and knowledgeable than we are, about the Sunday night game and the future. You did talk a little bit about it, but I don't have a schedule in front of me, okay. So you have to do it off your memory. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm April Kopak, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We are an active, independent community of older adults and disabled individuals. Our spacious one-bedroom apartments feature controlled key access, off-street parking, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many activities and exercises. Tours are welcome. Please call Three Links Apartments at 664-8850 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for footlong starting at $4.99. How do you want it?
Yeah, I'll take a blast of death metal, please.
You got it.
Now Subway, full of black horse hair, spicy Italian, cold cut couple. Marinara or veggie delight, starting at $4.99 each. Ooh, I've got jalapenos in my eyes. Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time at participating shops. Prices vary and are higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Extras additional, plus tax, no additional discounts, coupons applied.
Yeah, Subway in Northfield and Subway in Dundas. Stu Boyd, we have 3 minutes.
Okay.
Sunday night, Chicago. Always, they... Years when you were playing, they were tough, and defense especially. And then they got to be pretty weak, and it was kind of like, well, we're going to beat Chicago by how much. And this Sunday night, it's a battle, and it may be cold out, and it's at Soldier Stadium. And they got the new quarterback there. Then they got the big guy on defense that I think they got from what, the Patriots? Or
Raiders. Khalil Mack.
Yeah. So, what do you think in regards to injuries and game plan and all that?
Well, this is a tough part of the schedule. This is what makes or breaks it. And we can't afford, you might afford a loss, but you really can't afford more than a couple because it's, even though you want to win the NFC North, I mean, you know, you got the Rams and the Saints who have both beaten us. So we got that tie, which will figure in big as far as you want a home field advantage. I mean, we're a good team, and I don't want to. If indeed, I don't want to look ahead to the playoffs too much. But if you got to on the playoffs, you had to play away from home all your games. Chances are tough. It can be done, but so this week, underdog against the Bears, they're for real. Their quarterback's matured. He passed for a lot of yards last game. Their defense is as good as ours. It'll be a big test. I think we got to put a lot of pressure on Trubisky, and you know they're healthy. We're getting back to health. But after that, it doesn't get any easier. We're going to play the Packers, who are still have Aaron Rodgers, play them on a Sunday night. That'll be a huge game. And then you go on the road against New England and Seattle before you come back home and play Miami and the Bears. You know, I think somebody's going to win that NFC North. You might have to be 10-6, and I'm not sure we can get there.
You mentioned playing on the nights. I don't know why, but I worry when they're nationally televised. Mm-hmm. It seems like they get stage fright.
no question. But also the other team, the other, you talk about home field advantage, the Bears will be ready to go. I mean, they'll be out, having their, their cocktails out in front at Soldier's Field. They'll be wild. They got it in for the Vikings because we've had, even since my era, they've generally had it in for the Bears. The Bears and the Lions, and we always battle the Packers, but Bears and the Lions, other than a couple times over the last 25 years, they might have a team and they might, the Lions beat us last year, but, those are games like, when you see the schedule, well, we'll beat them. No longer are the Bears easy team. They're under new coaching. They've got healthy players. They spent some money on getting some new players. We're underdogs, there's no question, but I have faith. We got a good team.
How many points?
I saw 3.5 points, which is usually you get three points for me in the home field. So they're, they got a better record. We're 5-3-1, and they're 6-3, and they're in top.
There was a team that used to put their entire schedule above the lockers. And they would say, well, we can beat them. They're going to be tough. Oh, we'll walk all over them, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. And they got upset. I think it's a Big Ten team I'm talking about. And the coach took all of that stuff off and only put the next game up there so that they look at that. We have to do it one at a time. Is there a good philosophy there?
Oh, it's great philosophy. I'll just say two words, Buffalo Bills. I mean, that was a team. I mean, for spreads, we're gonna clean their clocks. I mean, their guy, I didn't know who their quarterback was, and they had just gotten beat the week before bad. I'm going, do you want to pay attention to the game? And I think I was signing autographs and up in the suite. So I'm going like, I'll probably leave in the third quarter. The game's over. We'll plan. No, they beat us soundly,
So how much do you get for an autograph nowadays? I mean, some guys go to these events and they sit at a table and they sign things and they get paid for each autograph.
I would say, for the Vikings, we get to buy $500.
Wow. That's
for an hour. That's not bad. And you go sit in the suite. And but there's a lot of, I probably do that a few games during the year, maybe three, but there's a whole bunch of alumni and they pass it around, but it's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's good. Walk around money.
Yeah, it's good. And I like it because it keeps you out there. You see some fans, and some guys will say, I got your autograph. My joke is I want everybody in the state to have my autograph because I've been in town here a long time. So, and it's fun. I'm part of the old school, like from the Met. I like interacting with the fans and seeing some people and saying hello from some guy that drove down from Fargo or up from Northfield. It's part of the fun. I don't think players do that as much. They kind of, used to be, we would go at Met Stadium, would go from the locker room to the stadium club to the parking lot to a couple of bars. I mean, anybody who was serving beer and had chips and hot dogs were there. So
I remember those days vividly, and I'll never forget them.
In lieu of money, that was pretty good. We had a lot of fun, didn't we?
Yeah, you bet. Thank you very much, Stu Voigt.
My pleasure. Time flies here.
We're out. We're going to go over to the quarterback club. I have a friend that will be there, and we'll have something to eat.
Sounds great.
I'm buying. Thank you. This is your radio station. We are KYMN 1080 AM radio from Northfield, Minnesota, and
95.1.
The One.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. Gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. I got no kick against modern jazz. If you wanna dance with me.
because they had a Jew.